Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN on this Wednesday afternoon, nice and sunny on Michigan Avenue outside the Allstate Showcase Studio. We'll talk to Terry Savage about what's going on Wall Street and more coming up. A little bit later in the second half hour, Tribune Business columnist Robert Reed will be along. Have you seen the story about tipping and the Labor Department rule? Maybe they want to change tips and that waitresses or waiters who make tips would have to put it into a pot for everyone. A lot of controversy there. Robert doesn't like it, so we will kick that around with him a little bit later. And we will talk to Barbie Adler, the founder, the CEO of Selective Search, a matchmaking service, kind of an expensive one. So we'll talk to Barbie in the second half hour. Right now, let's say hello to Terry Savage. You can read her columns at terrysavage.com in the Chicago Tribune, Channel 9 here on the Biz Lunch, just about everywhere. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Glad to be there. And by the way, I want to stay tuned for both Rob Reed and Barbie Adler, who I've known forever.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think Barbie's in the green room already, so you can talk to her in the break. Okay, so we came out with the consumer price index today. Numbers were high, indicating inflation, indicating more Fed interest rate hikes, and the stock market sort of plummeted at the beginning, but they've recovered and then some, up more than 100 points this afternoon now.
Yeah, we're up almost 130 points because the stock market can't figure out whether this inflation thing and the possibility of higher interest rates is good news because it signals growth in the economy, or bad news because interest rates, the 10-year Treasury note, hit 2.9%, and that is the highest it's been in a couple of years. I'm looking at it right now. U.S. Treasury up 2.9%. So that means mortgage rates will go up. That means other interest rates will go up. So the market's back and forth on this. But I'll tell you one market that's saying, oh, this inflation, which is very ironic, by the way, because, you know, we spent 3 years worrying, or 4 years or 5 years worrying about there was no inflation.
Right.
The Fed was so worried. They poured money into the economy. There was no inflation. Where did it go? Suddenly it's out there and we're seeing it. And the market that tells you about that is gold, which is now $1,352 an ounce, up about $22 an ounce today, and that'll tell you something right there. So obviously inflation's coming back.
But as you said, these are all things that we wanted to happen, right? We wanted wages to go up. We wanted to be full employment. We wanted GDP to go up. These are all the things we've been pulling for, so we shouldn't be surprised when they happen.
You know, I think the market was bored. Remember, life was so boring. Every day was a new high. There was not, we went almost a year with no 1% declines in the stock market. It was a ho-hum thing. Of course, I'm getting rich. Stocks go up. Everything is, you know, going to be fine. And the market always fools the greatest number of people. So now we have the same news that we were kind of expecting and somewhat hoping for. And all of a sudden, the market is thrown into a frenzy. Is it good news or bad news? And that's basically, aside from the technical stuff about people doing strategies that created margin calls, that's basically what's out there now. The world can't decide. Central banks are sucking money out. If the Fed is no longer buying bonds and propping up the prices and keeping yields down, well, then, of course, interest rates are going up. They'll make it official in March when they do the first of what was supposed to be three, maybe four increases. And so the question is this good news or bad news? The market cannot decide.
Lloyd Blankfein was on interviewed by CNN, and I've heard this from others too. He's the CEO of Goldman Sachs, right? And he is saying, look, the economy was already going along pretty well, and then they put these huge tax cuts into the economy. They've added another $300 billion in spending, and the president talking about a $200 billion infrastructure plan. He said that all of the government programs, that the tax cut really came at a time when you should be worried about a recession, not when things were starting to take off, that the timing of all of that was bad, and that that's going to have an adverse impact on the economy. What do you make of that?
So he makes a good point. I mean, I truly know, as you know, believe the only way out of our huge accumulated deficits over the years is to get economic growth. And whatever you may think about the tax cut for individuals, the corporate tax cut was absolutely designed to spur the economy and create economic growth and bring in revenues that would limit the deficit. If you then pile on top of that additional government spending, you're not going to get that deficit reduction. You're going to have to borrow more money. that pushes interest rates up when the Fed has to borrow more, and in fact, in order to attract buyers. So there's all of a sudden this drag on the economy. And then the president is talking also about all kinds of tariffs, reciprocal taxes. I mean, I can how they come up with these names, I have no idea. But we know that free trade makes an economy grow, and trade barriers just raise prices for consumers. So far this year, there have been some positive things and some negatives. The negatives had been, up until recently, a decline in the dollar that makes imports more expensive. Fear of tariffs, that makes imports more expensive. So infrastructure spending increases a deficit. None of that's good stuff, but maybe it's offset by economic growth and the fact that unemployment is low now and wages will rise a bit. That's going to be good news and bad news. Inflationary, but good for the people that are working.
All of it begs the question, what's your appetite for risk? We'll talk to Terry about that coming up in the second segment. It's 1222. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on the phone line today. You can read more from Terry and check out her website at terrysavage.com. Okay, so, you know, when things are as volatile as they are now and the correction, has the correction arrived or is the correction still coming, Terry?
Oh, you want me, my crystal ball?
Yeah.
Look, I think it's time we stop trying to decide. You know, all you have to do is watch the financial television shows, and you will see within, you know, one day a dozen sensible and very opposite directions. I think what everybody needs to do is focus on the risks that are in front of them in their own life. I just want to do two risks. Interest rates in the stock market.
Okay.
Interest rates are a risk for you if you have a adjustable rate mortgage. My goodness gracious, we've been talking about that forever. You need to lock in a fixed rate mortgage. If you have a home equity loan, not only will the interest rate go up, but interest on home equity loans is no longer deductible this year after the new tax law. I think a lot of people don't know that. So your exposure is huge. If you have credit card debt.
Wait a minute. So you said interest on home equity loans is no longer deductible. That's part of the new tax law.
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
Okay, not the $100,000
right,
limit,
right.
Not the limit on mortgage interest deduction, but the interest on, which is $850,000, I believe, but the interest on home equity loans. So that's, I mean, in the past you were able to take out interest on a loan up to $100,000. But there is now no longer a deduction, and it doesn't go backwards just because you had your loan last year.
Right.
You no longer can deduct that. So anybody, talk about risk. Your risk in interest rates comes right to you if you've got loans that are not locked in at a fixed rate. Oh, but bigger risk could it be than having your mortgage payment go up? Today, I mean, the 10-year Treasury note on which mortgage rates are based has gone to a new higher at 2.9%. That doesn't sound like much. When it hits 3%, you're going to be reading about it in the headlines. So lock in your rates, remove your exposure to higher interest rates. The second side of it is, it doesn't matter what pundit is right about the stock market and when they're right. It only matters whether you sleep at night. I've repeated this before, so I'll be brief. You're young, you're putting money in your 401k, just keep putting it in there. America's going to survive and prosper. You've got years. You're on the edge of retirement. You need to get conservative. But the worst mistake you can make is thinking that if you buy, quote, safe bonds or the bond fund in your 401k, that you're going to be safe. You're not, because when interest rates rise, bond prices fall.
You know,
you've got to go back to making money.
Your column says, your column's headline is your risk appetite. And that's, I hear that phrase all the time. You know, what's your risk appetite, your appetite for risk? But I don't know if that's the right, I mean, I might have an appetite for spicy food. That's one thing. But when it comes
but
to.
Not all the time.
But not all the time. But when it comes to appetite, I mean, I wonder if appetite's the wrong word and it should be just where you are in your life, your station in life.
That's rather, but the point is, you need to know yourself. I made a point in the column. I have gone to buffets where I've said, I'm really not hungry, I'm not going to eat very much. And then you see all the goodies there.
Do they have shrimp?
All of a sudden your appetite picks up, you want it all. Or then you get the indigestion. The point I'm making is when you thought the market was going up and it was easy and it was always going to go up, your appetite for risk seemed to increase. Everything was a goodie. Now you recognize right this minute. It may go higher. It will go higher. I will make a prediction. In our lifetimes, knocking on some wood, the market will go much, much higher. The question is, what if it goes lower first and you need to take money out to live on? You want to have some cash on the sideline so that some of the money, yes, over a 20-year period of your retirement, you need, stocks have always beat inflation over the 20-year periods, every 20-year period. Diversified stock portfolio has beat inflation with dividends reinvested. So you need some stocks, but you also need to understand that you're going to get a lot of indigestion between now and then if you're depending on stocks and are forced to sell them for whatever, medical bills, any unexpected expense, or just retirement lifestyle.
All right, Terry said, I don't know. Did you get my chocolate yet? I sent chocolate. Did you see it? Did you get it yet?
No.
Oh. Well,
you
maybe,
know what a sucker I am for chocolate.
Maybe it was lost in the mail, so I'll just say Happy Valentine's Day.
You got me. Happy Valentine's Day.
We'll talk again next week.
Terry.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. Barbie Adler's in the studio. Happy Valentine's Day, Barbie.
Thank you. Happy Valentine's Day,
everyone. CEO and founder of Selective Search. Selective Search is, it's not Match.com, is it?
No, this is high-end. This is offline. We're the leading luxury matchmaking firm in North America.
And so when you say high end, you're talking about, well, you start at $25,000.
Right. Our programs start at $25,000, but you have to realize that the investment in your love life is priceless.
Do you hate that people bring up the cost right away? But
no, because I think that, look, in life, you get what you pay for, and we are all about helping, making sure that we add love to people's lives.
Yeah.
So this is a national holiday, but we do this every day. It's Valentine's Day every day in our world.
So high end people who are looking for relationships, they start at $25,000, and then what do they get from you that they wouldn't get from a regular matchmaker or a lower priced person?
So people that are commitment minded, they might not have the access time to find a quality like individual. So that's where people come to us, both men and women that are looking for someone special. And everything that we do is offline. So my background is executive search. And so our company's whole philosophy and principles is going back to face-to-face versus cyberspace. So if people...
So you're not doing email interviews and things
like
that?
No, everything is in person, getting to know you, everything that you're looking for, and making sure that we only introduce you to someone that you're looking for that's looking for you. And
Barbie,
our results are off the chart.
How many people are putting up $25,000 to meet someone?
We are in high demand. We are busy year-round. This is not a seasonal business. And I'm proud to say that we have clients all over the country and other parts of...
So you're busy.
We are
so
extremely busy. And this what's rewarding is doing this as a life's work is that our headquarters are in Chicago. Selective Search, just around the block from you, is a team of over 35 people at headquarters and all over the country. And our clients are the who's who all over North America that are looking for love, and we find them the love
of
their life.
So are there people we know who you've kind of hooked up?
I guarantee you know at least 50 people personally that are in the headlines that are clients that have gotten married.
And it'd be wrong for you to share the names.
That is absolutely against our policy. That's okay, why so people come to us for the confidentiality. Everything we do is private and custom screened for our clients.
I get that. So just give us four. So for $25,000, what do you get?
You get a personal recruiter that's going to sit down face to face, get to know you, everything you're looking for, understand your life, your lifestyle, understand everything that's important to you, whether it's religion, hobbies, passions, interests, where you are. You and Terry Savage are talking about life page. The same thing applies to your love life. Do you want to be soccer dad, soccer mom, or are you looking to raise kids together? Or are you looking, wow, I've already done that. Now I want to experience life and travel and see and smell the roses
but
with somebody.
Some places might say, okay, for the monthly fee, we will set you up on 18 dates.
So you're thinking
like
short term.
Well, I'm asking
So
yeah.
Our clients are commitment minded, not mattress minded. So if you have acquired success in your life, by design, that you have an incredible career, friends, family, everything in your life, but that one thing that's missing, that's where Selective Search comes in, takes the labor out of finding love, and we will introduce you to someone that will go the future.
Okay, so I'm assuming when I start to pay you that the meter's running. I mean, how long does the $25,000, you know what I'm saying?
Our programs are a year in duration.
A year. Okay.
Yeah. And so we're committed to working with you, getting to know you. We'll only take you on if we believe in you and your search. And you have to realize the investment is the back end, because think about how many time someone's been in love, the divorce rate is right over 50% for first-time marriages.
The divorce can cost a lot more than 25
grand. Correct. It's over 60% of second marriages. So you have a lot to lose, more than the program of a $25,000
entry
fee.
So if the first year goes well but doesn't end in a relationship, you could re-up for a second year?
You can, but most of our clients' first year find love, but...
You know what I'm getting at. What's the most someone's ever spent?
Oh, my goodness. You have to realize that this is what people do to find love. So people, if you think about it, right, people could spend their money on boats and on fine art and things like that. So these are people that want to find love in their life. But we do have people that are repeat customers.
Yeah.
But what's really rewarding is then finding them love, and they understand the value of a pipeline of us bringing quality people. And there's something to be said about quality dating. A lot of times, it's over 30%. The first introduction is someone's last introduction, and they find love.
What do you keep track of your numbers of people who become
couples?
We
do. Yeah. We are so proud of our numbers. We have over 1,500 marriages. We have over 500 selective search babies and counting. And we have over 4,000 people in relationships right now. So people that are life partners that maybe are older that don't want to commingle assets and they're living together or in exclusive relationships.
How long have you been around?
2000? Since 2000.
Okay, 17
Can't
years.
Can't you see the gray hair?
So no, I don't see the gray hair. So I was surprised by the babies a little bit because I was thinking this would be an older crowd, right?
It's both. There's people that are in their very mature in their 20s and 30s that would never want to do swipe right, swipe left, and not into the apps. The great thing about what's happening today is that it's making people come flock to us because they're getting burned by all the dating sites and the apps because people are unfortunately not being accurate right about things about who they are.
I read something in an article, and I think it was from 2013, so I don't know how accurate it is, but the way it was described was that the men pay and that the women sign up for free to be chosen.
That's a great question. There's actually two ways that both genders can participate. You could either hire us to be a client, and then you have a retained search, or you could be an affiliate member. There's no fee ever, and what that is submitting your information. Everything's private, and then we'll consider you for an active
client. So if you're an affiliate member, then you would be chosen. You wouldn't have access to choosing.
Correct, but you'd be considered for some amazing person,
right,
and we're proud of making sure that we find them love, too.
So are the affiliate members only women?
No, men and
okay.
women. So
okay.
Anyone that's single that's listening, you owe it to yourself to go to selectivesearch.com and let us know you.
Could be better than the lottery.
It will make you happier than the lottery.
So what percentage then of your paying clients are women?
You know, we actually have a good blend of both men and women. Men is higher,
yeah.
But women, it's a new day and people are doing things and taking a proactive approach to their own love life. And so it's really rewarding to work with both men and women.
Straight only?
Right now, we are focused on that because that's our expertise.
Sure.
But we do, everything that we do is customized. So if someone's interested, we will customize a program and only take you on if we believe that we could find you the love of your life.
Here we are on Valentine's Day, which I think is more fraught than
anything
else. Well,
it's a Hallmark holiday, but you have to realize that if it helps people remind themselves the one time of the year to focus on their love life, if they don't have love life, to make it a priority, because nothing's better than having someone to make life that much sweeter.
What's the best day for a first date?
Something that involves eye-to-eye contact in an atmosphere that you can actually hear.
You recommend that people make their first contact eye-to-eye? Would you call someone or email first? Or?
Well, I think going back to the basics and calling is so refreshing in this texting world that we live in right now. It's nice to use text to supplement, like if you're talking about logistics. But when you're trying to get to know someone, and it's great to hear their voice and set up a date, but definitely have a plan, make a reservation, put effort into it, like anything else.
Where do people find you?
Well, we are on the web at selectivesearch.com.
Okay, so Barbie Adler, CEO of Selective Search. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. Maybe we'll get a numbers update in a year from now.
Well, if someone's single, we could happily fix them up, and then you can witness the magic
them,
that
right.
we do.
Continued success. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Minute, sharing the news and asking questions for small business owners. You've probably heard that Chicago is giving Silicon Valley a run for its money. Oh, you haven't? Well, just look at the Illinois Emerging Technologies Fund that just raised a third round of funding, just a casual $15 million. It sure pays off to do your research. especially before making an investment in a business proposition. Attila Gillay, the former co-owner of Ambaya, a West Loop Asian restaurant, is now wanted by the FBI after misappropriating at least $300,000 from business partners and executive chefs at the restaurant. I bet someone wishes they did their research beforehand. Tune in tomorrow for all your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Art, are you headed out to lunch, or maybe you're headed just back for lunch? What sort of tip did you leave your wait person? And with that tip, did you expect that the waitress keeps it all, keeps most of it, or does it go to the house? There's a Department of Labor proposed rule that would send it to the house for distribution. Robert Reed, a Chicago Tribune columnist, wrote about that recently, and he joins us in the studio. Robert, thanks for coming back. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right, so here's how I understand this. Right now you leave a tip. I'll say waitress, could be waiter. We'll just go with waitress.
Sure.
And she then, because of her direct service to me, now she may well put that in and give some to the bartender, give some to the busboy, things like that. But it's kind of discretionary or up to the house rules. The Department of Labor rule would, for waitresses making minimum wage or more, would require them to give their tips to the house to have it divvied up, right?
Well, in essence, that's correct. That if you're the tips that you would be giving would sort of be considered, if you will, community property,
right?
And under this proposed rule change, which the Obama administration had put into place, this would then allow management to redistribute some of that money. And the theory behind it is that you would spread out the wealth between the server, the wait staff, the dishwashers, the cooks, and so on. That's the theory.
So this started under Obama?
Yeah, the change did. Yeah,
okay, the proposed rule. So this is
The rule that's going to be proposed to be rolled back.
Oh, okay.
Was an Obama rule.
Oh, so I didn't realize that. So this rule that we're talking about was already in existence?
Yes, it was already in existence, and the idea there was that the tips go to the people that the tips are meant to go to, which
right.
means the server, the waiter, the waitress, whomever it may be.
I'm sorry, I'm a little thick then. So under the Obama rule, the tip went to the waitress.
Yes.
Under the Trump rule, this is where the change would be.
Yes, that's where
okay.
the change would be.
And so even the restaurants, I'm not sure that they even like this idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of reasons for the restaurants not to like the idea because it does add another layer of confusion to the whole transaction.
Right.
In addition to that, not to get into the nitty-gritty of how wages and tips and all that works, it's not just one size fits all. There are different ways in which restaurants compensate the wait staff and so on. But again, the whole point here is that if you give the money that you're giving to the waiter or the waitress, that money is supposed to be shared under this proposal. Where it breaks down is apparently the way the rule is written. Legal eagles who have looked at it say there's way too much open-endedness, and basically management could take those proceeds and use them for whatever it is that they want to use.
So they could legally say, well, my business needs a new roof, so we're going to take part of the pool and to help pay for the roof.
Yeah, there's nothing in there that prohibits that from occurring, which is what troubled these 15 attorneys general who have filed a complaint against this rule change,
right.
including Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan.
So I heard also that they said, well, look, the waitress is up front, so she's getting the money, but the dishwasher's in back. No one thinks of the dishwasher. They should be entitled to a share of this money, too. But the opponents say, if you start giving the dishwashers tips, it could be cover for the owners then to cut the pay of the dishwashers, right? Keep it even,
sure.
But the money's coming from a different spot.
Sure, it's a possibility. And I think for a consumer, there's also the added confusion because there's sort of a compact, if you will, when you give a tip that money is going to the server.
Right.
You're not probably thinking about the back of the house, the dishwasher, and the cooks.
I have to say, I hate tips altogether. I always tip 20%, maybe sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
Just put it on my menu price because I tip out of obligation. I feel like I'm expected to. That's why I tip. I'm going to give you 20%. And this game of you know, 18 or 20. To me, it's like, make it clear cut. Let's just put it on the menu.
Yeah. And, you know, there are like whole websites and books on tipping etiquette. It's very confusing, particularly around the holidays. And your point's well taken. And some restaurant chains or individual restaurants have decided to do a no tipping kind of rule and compensate their wait staff a different way.
Yeah.
Others are going cashless. And when you go cashless, you know, you kind of take tipping out of that equation as well.
It does go through the house there one way or another then.
It does. Eventually it goes through the house. But, I mean, again, the idea is that if you're tipping, you're tipping the server, and that's part of their wages.
Okay, so what is the timetable here? When do we find out about this?
It appears to be right now open-ended. There were a ton of comments that were given on the Labor Department website about this. I would say the majority of them were against the changing the rule.
And we're late, but also the Inspector General is going to actually investigate because they said the Department of Labor kept out some of the negative statistics when they proposed this rule.
Yes, that's right. They either tamped down those statistics or ignored them as they developed the rule, and now there are people who are concerned that they're working with bad information.
Robert Reed, columnist. Read him at the Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com. Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.